All right. Here we are recording during a big storm and a couple days before Friday the 13th.
No, it's not appropriate.
Yeah.
You all painted up for a crackhead, huh? Halloween ain't till mañana.
Just another
So hello everybody and welcome to the show. We are Just Another Movie Night and I am Scott.
I'm Joe.
And today we are Talking Trash.
Talking Trash.
Talking Trash indeed. This is our show to review, spoil, debate, and crap on, and give second chances, and other things. on the lowest rated movies on the internet. Well, on IMDb anyways. So that's what we're doing.
You're spoiling, you're debating, you're crapping on, you're giving second chances to the lowest rated, the much debated and often forgotten flicks on the internet, all while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because we know on this show that you can't truly rate a movie if you haven't seen the worst.
That was the most romantic thing I've ever heard in my life, that you knew everything I was about to say better than I could say it. That tells you how many of these we've done. And I haven't, we haven't been doing that intro. We only started that not too long ago.
It hasn't been long, no.
Has it been? It hasn't been long, yeah.
No, I don't think so. No,
and you knew it by heart.
I try.
And that is why I love you so much.
Oh, is that why?
Oh, so many reasons.
I'll take that it. Just, I'll take
that's
anything.
That's one of the 1 billion reasons.
If you love me just because you think that I am silly, I'll take that. I'll take anything.
Oh, my sweetheart. What are we doing? We're doing Potoween. We're in October.
Potoween. I hate us.
I love us. Hey, yeah, I already gave it away that we're doing this during near Friday the 13th, so we know we're not recording. We're lying. But still,
yeah,
this is October, our favorite month where we do Potoween.
Potoween.
And Potoween to us is loving on horror movies, but we're doing something interesting. Since it's Talking Trash, we can't love.
No.
Maybe we can learn to love. Maybe we can try to love. Or maybe we secretly do love. Because this is like a hot take month. Because Joe came up with the idea to talk about movies in horror movie franchises that are the lowest rated of that franchise.
Yep.
So she picked 5 franchises. And we're going through in order from the lowest rated to the highest rated of these franchises. And so today we are on the 3rd movie of the month, and we're talking about a movie that the creator, Sean S. Cunningham, called Beyond Embarrassing. We are, of course, talking about Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, a.k.a. Friday the 13th, Part 9.
Horror has many faces. Death wears many different masks, but pure evil wears only one, and this is your final chance to see it. Jason Goes to Hell. The Final Friday.
You said that with such gusto.
Gusto. It has a 4.1 on IMDb from 37,000 reviewers and a 17 on Metacritic. The budget was $3 million and it grossed $15.
Wow. Okay.
It's written and directed by Adam Marcus. He wrote the bad 2013 Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot. No, not the one with Jessica Biel. The one with Alexander Daddario.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So, look, here's the deal, right? This movie has gone through some real, real interesting, messy trivia, some interesting stuff behind the scenes. It is a debacle of a film. And I'm going to give a hot take. I don't hate this movie. And I know a lot of people do.
I hate it.
Well, we'll talk about it. Since it's our third film and we're going in order, this is not as low rated as those other two have been so far. But as people kind of talk about the Friday 13th series, they usually mention this one as a bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is extremely brutal. I don't think it deserves it, but I think there's a theme going on here with the entire month. I wouldn't say the entire month. The last movie we're going to do in the series is probably not going to fit this, but I think all the other ones do. They are all trying to do something different.
Yes.
And I think anytime a series does something different, they get shit on.
Mm-hmm.
And especially a series of movies that are extremely repetitive, which is a big thing in all the movies we're doing this month. Franchises that went on for very, very long times and became extremely repetitive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Can I just state something really quick? We're talking about the reviews and stuff. A lot of people on IMDb seem to be upset about this movie because there's, you know, not a lot of Jason Voorhees in it.
See, there you go.
So, but here's my thing about that is that people love Season of the Witch, right?
Yes.
And there's no Michael Myers. And I mean no Michael Myers in Season of the Witch.
In fact, the people who defend Season of the Witch say that everybody who hates it is mad only because Michael Myers isn't in it, which I don't agree with.
Okay, no, that's not the reasoning at all, but I feel
not for
like,
us anyways, but right. For some people maybe.
Yeah. Because
I have heard, I think you even kind of mentioned it on one of our episodes, there's no Michael Myers, and I always said, don't say that because you're fueling the fire of the people who think that's the reason.
Right, well, you know how I feel about that. It's like, you can't really say this is a Halloween movie if you don't have Michael Myers in it. It's just not a Halloween movie without Michael Myers. It's weird.
Well, I mean, that was his original intent. And if that was what the director wanted to do, original concept was to make a Halloween movies that were different in like an anthology. Very cool idea. But unfortunately, they were forced into making the sequel and keeping Michael Myers alive.
And I thought, let's don't do another. Let's come up with another story that's Halloween-based, but doesn't have Michael Myers in it. And what did I fuck up, huh?
Okay, well, anyway, so we can move on. I just wanted to make that statement because a lot of people don't seem to like this because Jason kind of takes the back seat in his own movie, but it's the same thing for Season of the Witch.
And isn't that also funny because Jason's in this whole movie. It's just not the Jason that we're accustomed to.
True.
So let's talk out the plot a little bit here and like discuss it as we go along about what we feel, how we see it, and how other people seem to deem it not worthy of the series.
Yeah.
Because this movie starts out with, I think, a very funny, clever meta humor on the series itself. And I think that the intent here was to, okay, we have to move on. I mean, this is number 9. The opening of this movie very cleverly follows an actress who is known now as a big stunt performer. Her name is Julie Michaels.
Oh, yeah.
She was in Roadhouse.
Mm-hmm.
She also was one of the main characters in Point Break. She's the woman who fights Keanu Reeves.
Oh, okay.
She has done a lot, but she has become a huge stunt coordinator and stunt woman. She opens this movie as being the damsel in distress, going to a cabin in the woods and doing all the things that we've become accustomed to in these movies. Even breaking down to how scared jump scares work in Jason movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're mocking all of that. I think this is very clever. I think it's a fun way to say out with the old.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's do something totally new. So this movie follows her as she's doing all those little things in the house. Getting naked, the whole thing. By the way, she has a lot of hair under that hat, which we laugh about every time we see it. The hair pops out and you're like, whoa, where'd all that come from?
That's like me if I tucked mine under. It would be like a cavewoman. Whoosh. No. You would get a breeze.
Your hair is not like this hair. This hair is like three wigs under there.
Yeah, it's a lot of hair.
It is a lot of hair. Of course, as we're going along, you think that Jason is in every shot. He's going to show up. They're mm-hmm. playing with it, really. They're playing with the music. They're doing everything exactly the way these movies have made you accustomed to believing mm-hmm. that's about to happen. And she screws in a light bulb very badly. We're just mentioning it because we both laugh yeah, about
I'm
it.
I'm bothered by that it's light just bulb. Like that light bulb screwing. Like, what? Who does that?
She just like kind of dangled it in there, and it worked. It could
have started a fire.
And it's funny because whoever put the one in before it, it did pop and burn.
Yeah, exactly. They probably screwed it in the same way. Dummies. Yeah,
I don't even think it was screwed in.
This is what our lives like are right now. In. We're talking about a light bulb in a movie.
It's just funny. If you see it and you notice it, it is very, very, you can't help stare at it. But so, yeah, of course, being a Jason movie, he has somehow teleported right next to her.
Of course he did.
And this leads to our Jason chase, another one of those cliches in the Jason movies. The thing to notice here is that Jason has now become what I would call a giant ball sack with a mask. He looks like tumors. Or he looks like the Elephant Man had the Jason hockey mask glued into his flesh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not attractive.
It doesn't look good. It's not attractive. It is very off-putting.
I think he looked his sexiest in part two when he had the sack over his head. Just saying.
At least he looked more of like a person. This time around, it is very bizarre to look at. And I guess this is what we should be in for, because we know that Jason has morphed within each movie into some kind of Frankenstein
monster. It's a monster. Like, I mean, after 9 movies, he's been through some shit.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Let's talk about this, right? Because I think this is a huge hot take on my part, and this is something that probably piss off the whole world.
Oh, no.
Here comes the Kane Hodder conversation.
Oh, no.
Because I like the original series. Now, I think we both kind of agree that one isn't the groundbreaking great movie that we hear it is.
No, it's like a starter film.
A starter film. It is interesting only for having a twist that when you think about it for 1 minute, if you pull the thread, the entire thing is going to unravel because it doesn't make sense.
No.
And that's why I can say that I absolutely love the remake of the Friday 13th series, because they were able to do the first 3 movies in like one film. And I think it's actually very clever. I think they found a way to make all of that work really well. I like the idea that Jason has been alive this whole time and that his mother is just nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really fun, but the first movie kind of suggests that's not true. I don't really understand it. It's hard to understand. But Jason is a human being. And for 4 movies, we follow the entire week of his life, basically. Each movie is like the next day.
It seems like it, yeah.
I think they are supposed to be taking place at the same time.
Well, I don't know about part 2, because after part 1, there were all those murders. I want to say that they needed some time to get that place ready again.
Yeah, that's true. I was wondering,
because if you think about it, when Amy Steele finds the mother's head, Pamela Voorhees' head, it's quite decayed. So we're talking about at least a year.
Okay, so you might be right. So maybe 2, 3, and 4 are the same.
We can assume that,
or the same couple days.
Yeah.
I like that a lot, because you watch Jason go through all the wounds and all the things, and you get to see him just like fall apart. And you see it end. You see him finally killed, and he's done. But then the movies were like, no, Even though the five tries to reboot the series and try to come up with a new idea of the new person taking over Jason, people got mad. So then they started going, well, he's paranormal.
Yes.
And so we have to keep resurrecting him. And the movies got goofier and goofier. And as Kane Hodder took over Jason, Jason himself started becoming what I associate with Bane.
Your idle gossip distracts me from my master plan. Break the Batman, punish Gotham for its transgressions, and stand atop the mountain of skulls left in my way.
Like, he's a guy roided up, and he's always, like, huffing and puffing, and his body's always, like, the only way he can think of how to emote is to have him, you know, breathe in and out and show his muscles breathing up and down.
Yes, he pants a lot, which it's like, okay, well, I mean, I don't know Jason to do that. He seems, I don't know, that's just weird.
He just seems like a dude that got out of the gym, has been pumping iron, and now he's mad. Mm-hmm. That's all he seems like to me. And I've never been into it. I think it's fine because those movies got goofier and goofier and they're kind of silly. And so it's like, it makes it able to deal with it.
Yeah.
This movie hits prime Kane Hodder Jason, where it is just now, not only is he huffing and puffing and doing all that stuff, this time he's actually grunting. So when we see the woman run away from Jason after he slashes her and she falls off over the balcony, she goes running and he does his little walk chase. And she does her fall. We do all the cliches, but it's a trap. What's actually happening here is that there's a SWAT team or a special unit designed just to kill Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've had enough of this shit. and rightfully so. Yeah. Rightfully so. They use this woman as bait. She's actually a agent. And she was using herself as bait to lead him out. Mm-hmm. So they open fire on him. They have him in complete crosshairs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just riddling him with bullets. And all we have to hear is Kane Hodder doing, ooh, Eve, ooh. And I'm like, what the
fuck? So I don't see Jason ever making noises like that. I think it was a little bit extra. Can I just chime in real quick on this scenario? This whole plot of this agent, like, you know, being used as bait and stuff. What would have happened if she, at any point there...
She could have failed.
She could have failed this mission.
That's what undercover agents do.
Yeah, but I mean, I just feel like that's a bit of a risk. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, let's take in the scenario that behind the scenes, there's a part where she said, I am willing to take out this son of a bitch and sacrifice my naked body for his glance just to kill this son of a bitch. And you know what's really funny is one of them yells out their live grenade and it hits him and Jason just blows the hell up.
Yeah, he gets blown smithereens, which I think is amazing. I loved it.
At the same time, we see that someone's watching in the forest.
Oh.
It's a guy named...
Creighton
Duke. The cowboy.
A cowboy.
Yeah. This guy's name is... The actor's name is Stephen Williams. I'll never
That's
not
so
know
funny.
That name. Stephen Williams. He's in tons of stuff. He is in the Walking Dead series, the spinoff series that they had, Fear the Walking Dead.
Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, he's also in The Blues Brothers. He's the cop that says, I'm going to get that son of a bitch. he's in The Leftovers. Really good actor. Like this actor. I don't know about his...
character
I,
in
I don't
this...
know about his character in this
okay,
movie. I can't blame him.
Awful. It's not his fault, but this character is awful.
I like that he's just watching in the woods. And not only did the SWAT team not find him, and not only did Jason not find him, none of them found each other, you know?
He's just in the general vicinity, just, you know, walking around having a hot dog or something.
Yeah. I just like the Creighton Duke. Doesn't it sound like a warehouse, like an IKEA?
Okay, you're thinking of Crate and Barrel.
Oh.
I like that you know what Crate and Barrel is.
I know who Creighton Duke is, and it sounds like he sells furniture.
Is Creighton Barrel still even around? I don't even know what I'm
talking
about.
I don't even know.
Yeah. I have never stepped a toe in Creighton Barrel in my life.
Neither have I.
feral Mary.
You know what
people?
I'm going to say to you exactly what Creighton Duke says to these SWAT guys?
Oh.
I don't think so.
Okay. Oh, I'll check myself.
Apparently, the guy who got the perfect shot on Jason is Mahoney.
Good shooting, Mahoney. Now clean up all this shit, huh?
Which I couldn't stop laughing to myself that, is this what happened to Mahoney after he left in Police Academy 4? Is this where he went with his life?
Oh, Mahoney.
Did he, Mahoney, get the last shot on Jason Voorhees? I would like to believe it.
You know, he's a really charming, cute guy, but he's kind of rapey.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, if you think about any 70s, 80s film, you're going to go, kind of rapey.
Kind of rapey, yeah.
And you know how I know it's actually Mahoney from Police Academy, because they got off many, many shots.
Oh.
Yeah, but Jason's dead. Jason is dead. And we get the new updated theme, which has been a running thing on this series. And the film score is once again by Harry Manfredini. We should know this is the composer that's done all the Jason movies.
Harry.
Or at least he had done the last seven films in the series.
Yeah, Harry Manfredini. Oh, he's 81. Anyway, let's move along here.
So we have the new score going off. And at the same time we're getting the score, we're also getting clips, which I think was a mistake on their part. I wish they wouldn't have done, they'd kind of do a clip, then the score again with a title card, and it kind of cuts in to all the moment. I wish they would have played this out linear.
Mm.
What we're seeing is that they have shipped Jason's body parts to the morgue, and they are being watched by the FBI, played by Kane Hodder, and a guy who looks an awful lot like Elvis, which is weird.
Check yourself. He looks like Elvis from the side view.
Every time he makes a face. If you watch this movie and you don't see Elvis and that guy, it's weird.
It's the side view that makes him look like Elvis. And he's kind of doing like the little snarl with the lip also. But it's the side view. When you look at him from like front view, he doesn't look like Elvis. Not that much. Maybe a smidge.
Okay. Calm down.
Nobody looks like Elvis.
Unbelievable.
God damn it. Anyways, we get to the morgue and we see a little Poindexter guy with the pizza.
No. What we see is the mortician taking apart the body and starting to, you know, also doing more cliches, drinking and eating while he's doing the thing.
Why does every single coroner do that?
Yeah. Well, he sees the heart. And we start seeing that the heart, he starts saying, it is filled with a black liquid that is not blood. And he's like, I don't know what this is. But as he's doing this and he's starting to get confused about it, something starts happening. The heart starts beating again. And I think it's actually a really cool effect. The heart is actually extra large as well. And it's on his scale. And so when it starts beating, the scale even goes off. So they did this really well.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
What happens is that the coroner, by the way, he's in a lot of stuff too. Richard Gant.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Deadwood and he was on Seinfeld and he was in Deadwood. He is starting to like stare at the heart like it's speaking to him or getting in his brain. You can see that he's kind of like becoming kind of like combative with himself,
mm-hmm,
until he finally gives in and seems to go a little like dead in the eyes. And then he reaches down and grabs the heart and eats it. Now, what I found out behind the scenes is that they filled this heart with a dyed fruit cocktail, Jell-O fruit cocktail.
It's so gross.
And they said even if it tasted good, the actor, while eating it, was so disgustingly nauseous from doing what he was doing,
mm-hmm,
that he couldn't stop gagging.
Yeah.
And he struggled to get this scene.
You can tell he's struggling, yeah. I think.
Well, it's also really believable. I mean, he's like when they start playing like noises in his, and you see it
like
dripping,
the gurgling,
in his throat.
And the, ugh.
Yeah, he looks like his neck is expanding.
It does.
It's I think it's pretty neat. Unfortunately, it is underscored every time by the score cutting in with title cards,
mm-hmm,
which I think it hurts it. But like you brought up, the Poindexter guy shows up with pizza because they're going to eat pizza in the coroner's office while they got a dead corpse.
Yeah, lots of body parts. It's a good time to eat dinner.
By the way, it's a dead corpse again. Why do I keep doing that?
You know what? I didn't even pick up on that. You said dead corpse.
I do it a lot. Yeah, I should have said the disgusting corpse. That is Jason Voorhees' guts all over a table body parts.
Ugh.
They're going to eat pizza. And when he goes in the office, he starts talking crap to the corpse.
How many people actually get a chance to say whatever they want to Jason fucking Voorhees? Hey, fuck. How you doing, you fat-ass, maggoty, blown-up fuck? Suck this! You know what I'd like to do to you? I'd like to take a crap right on your fucking mask. A big old mango-sized crap.
Yeah.
While he doesn't realize that his coworker is covered in guts on his face and everything. What's funny is now we're learning that Jason has somehow transferred into this man. So now this guy is Jason.
Because he ate the heart.
Because he ate the heart.
He's Jason. Which, I'll tell you, this is dumb.
See, I like it.
I don't. I mean, it just brings that, you know, whole paranormal, supernatural thing to a whole new level. It's like, okay, we didn't know where else to go with this franchise, so this is where we're at.
Well, I mean, what's interesting, what happened behind the scenes was a lot of weird stuff. They wanted to do Jason versus Freddy. That was all they wanted to do. And so they were coming up with concepts, and they basically told him, at first they were kind of like, yes. But then they said, no, we're going to hold off for a little bit. So he's like, well, I'll make another Jason movie that can come, like, connect.
Mm-hmm.
So they were kind of struggling to come up with ideas. One of the crazy ideas that they had was that Jason was going to fight street gangs. Yeah, in L.A. apparently, or something like that. I don't know. So that was one of the ideas. They kept coming with these concepts. And, of course, there's also this big thing with Sean Cunningham himself, who has been a foil to the Jason franchise. Everything that kind of people are mad about comes down to this producer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the reason we haven't had a Jason movie in so long. He fights everybody. He won't give credit to the guy who wrote the original movie and came up with all the concepts.
He's an asshole.
He does a lot of things. And apparently one of the rumors is that his quote was, and we have to get rid of that fucking mask.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people have backed up that isn't true. But a lot of people are saying that it is true. It's a very weird thing. But this movie would assume that he was telling that was true, that he did say that, because this movie is trying to get away from that. Well, I guess the big question here is, why do we have Jason being back to the way he is when at the end of the last one, which to me is the worst Jason movie? I know a lot of people seem to like Manhattan, but at the end of that movie, some acid or sewage has hit Jason and turned him into a child again. So the question is, how are we back here? Well, they were going to write a comic book. Apparently, they had a comic book all done where it was going to explain the gap.
Okay.
And it never came out. I don't know what happened there. And then they also said that this movie takes place after the original series. Like, not counting the last three movies in the series.
So, like, after four?
Yeah. They were going to say, oh, this takes place back in... They're not going to act like Manhattan never happened.
Oh, Lord.
So this movie was supposed to be the explanation of why Jason constantly looks like a different actor.
Okay.
A different size, different body. And in that sense, I'm on board. He does always look different.
He's still always hulking, though. I mean, they always pick somebody like Ken Kersinger. That guy's a monster. He's big. I don't know if he's as big as Kane Hodder. Or bigger, I don't know.
I think he's taller.
Yeah, but they do pretty good. There's one Jason that I thought was a peewee. Or no, that was Michael Myers, never mind. He was like a peewee.
But I mean, this concept of changing bodies would lend to an explanation of what has been happening in every movie. And in that sense, I'm on board for it because it kind of needs to be explained. I mean, it's one of these series that's like, nah, you don't have to worry about it. Just like James Bond, it's just a movie and go on with it. But it kind of lessens the movies as they go along. You're kind of like, why are we here? Why did Jason start teleporting? When can Jason do this? And I would like the idea that someone came along and is like, let's make lore. Even if that lore isn't great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At least their attempt is there. And I think that when anybody tries to do something like that, they should at least be credited. At least for trying.
All right.
And that's how I feel about it. I don't...
I mean, I appreciate the fact that they're trying to go a different direction. I do appreciate that, but I just feel like you have to be careful because it borders on goofy a little bit.
You think that the eating of a heart and transferring like a monster into each other's body, explaining Jason, is goofy? Isn't it already goofy?
I mean, I think it's goofy because like you're assuming, and this is me being an overthinker, but you're assuming that Jason has like any kind of emotions. So like, if Jason's soul lies in his heart, like he doesn't have a soul. He's almost a mindless zombie at this point.
Well, we're supposed to believe that he's an actual child who drowned and is getting revenge for whatever.
Yeah, but eight movies after that, we're still, like, now we're back at square one. You know, he's a different entity now.
In this, they're saying, no, he's a demon.
I guess they are saying that he's a demon, yeah.
Okay, so can I give you another fun fact?
Yeah.
Well, apparently, the writer of this movie said that he had full intended for his explanation of what's going on here is that this is the Evil Dead universe. And so that the Necronomicon does show up in this movie. He said he purposely did it and talked to Sam Raimi. And he told Sam Raimi that his belief in his mind of coming up with the concept of what's been happening in the series, he said that Voorhees found the Necronomicon and she wished her child back using it. And so that Jason is a deadite.
Oh my God.
And he always intended to have that crossover.
Oh, and were you going to have Ash Williams come into the universe?
Well, they worked on that for a very long time. Oh, that almost Christ. Happened. It almost happened that Jason versus Freddy versus Ash almost happened to explain what's been going on with all these characters in the supernatural. And he said he went to Sam Raimi and Sam Raimi thought it was awesome. To have Jason is a zombie and that he is a deadeye. And that's what's happening here with the transferring his soul.
Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. What about it? Is it ever going to happen? No. Think about it as a fan. Who would you want to win? Do you think the other franchises would let Ash win? No. You think Freddy, they've done like 98 of those stupid movies. You think they're going to let it end right there with Ash going boom, taking his head off? You're crazy. You don't know Hollywood. You think Paramount's gonna let the whole Jason series die? Cause I go, oh, they won't let that happen. So there's no reason for me to be in it,
Jason,
unless I can kill both of those losers. Right? So creatively, I don't think it'd be that much fun. Cause you wouldn't get the satisfaction that you need as a filmgoer, you understand? I'm glad we worked that out. Feel better now?
But I mean, that wouldn't make any sense if it was Jason versus Freddy versus Ash, because Jason and Freddy are like, you know, they're supernatural entities. Ash is a man.
That's the whole thing. He's been fighting the supernatural.
I get it. I guess, I don't know, maybe it would work.
They made a whole comic book series. I haven't read it, but there is a series that they did instead to explain this plot line that they originally intended. And originally in Jason versus Freddy, which I wish kind of happened, but a lot of people said no, the original ending of that movie was supposed to be that Jason and Freddy went at the end, they blew up, they're in hell, and they're fighting, and chains wrap around them, and they get pulled apart, and Pinhead comes out and says, what's the problem? what exactly is the problem here? And I always thought that was really cool, but they couldn't get the rights to Pinhead.
Hellraiser was it Dimension Films or no?
I think it was like, it wasn't New Line Cinema at the time.
No, I don't think it was New Line.
Whoever it was had the rights and they couldn't get all the rights. And they said they were selling it cheap, but they didn't want to even buy it. New Line. But what's funny is, of course, a lot of people point out that that's not possible because Pinhead is attached to the Lamont configuration, and it isn't, he's not actually a demon. He's actually just a guardian of that thing, that portal of pleasure. So it doesn't make sense, but it's still goofy fun that you kind of want to see.
It's Dimension and Miramax, but there you go.
Dimension. I should have known that. Well, that's interesting. Seeing that that was his intent, kind of, it started in the click. When you watch this movie in that eye, you go, okay, this kind of clicks together. I can see what he was getting at.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, now that we found out that Jason has now transferred his body to another guy, there's this news report, right? And then this is how you know all the movies have happened. They tell us on the news report that he has had 83 victims.
Oh, yeah. So they're... Yes,
so this is all the movies have happened.
Jason does exist in this world.
Yeah, and they also say numerous of others that they can't exactly pin on him, but they're pretty sure. But they are now, the news reporter is going to, I guess he does like a crime show, this news reporter.
Mm-hmm. By the way, sorry, just to interrupt real quick. Which killer has the highest body count? Do we know this?
It's going to be Freddy.
You think it's Freddy?
Because we're going to get to that next week. But in that next Freddy movie that we're going to do, they have said he has killed a very, very large amount of people because the entire town is empty.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, if you look at Freddy 2, he kills like a whole pool party.
Freddy 2. Yeah, he does. But I'm looking at it right now and it'll shock you. It seems like... Jason has 170 kills. 170.
Confirmed? On screen?
That's what it says.
That can't be true. On screen kills?
That's what it says. Let's look. Yeah. Which slasher villains have the highest kill count? It looks like Jason's winning. No. Pinhead. It says Pinhead, but who knows?
Pinhead. Well, he does do Hell on Earth and creates a shitload of people to kill everybody for him.
Yeah.
Which is, that also doesn't make any sense, but whatever. I mean, if you look at it, Freddy has killed, what we're told in the next Freddy movie is that he's killed so many people between movies, but we'll talk about that next week. In this movie, I love that the reporter has gone on to ask Creighton Duke in an interview what he thinks of when he talks about Jason. And he has the best response that any person has ever heard on a news report like this. What do you think of when you hear Jason Voorhees' name? He says, I think of a little girl in a schoolgirl outfit sticking a hot dog through a donut hole. I'm like, what the fuck?
First of all, this character is fucked in the head.
He's crazy.
He's beyond. I just don't like him at all.
And a shame is that this is another one of those plot lines that was written in the script that was completely dropped to explain this character. This character apparently in the script had a backstory where his girlfriend was killed on Camp Crystal Lake by Jason, and he dedicated his life to finding out all the information and becoming a hunter and getting revenge on these killers.
Is that what they're proposing?
That's what apparently is the script here, but was dropped and wasn't filmed
because this movie
went through a lot of problems.
It would have made more sense if they gave us some kind of explanation on why he even is hunting Jason.
Yeah, and all they had to do was write a line. They had to do was put a line in here, but they don't. Instead, they make him so cocky and so arrogant that it feels like he's just doing it for the money, which is $500,000.
He had his Quint moment, by the way.
He does, which is the first in many throwbacks to other horror films.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'll catch him and kill him and bring you bring you the machete and the mask, the whole damn thing for $500,000.
They needed a chalkboard scene in this movie where he comes in there and the police station scratches it.
Yeah.
That would have been way better than what they did with him.
That's for sure. He's awful.
I don't think so.
After that interview, we see that he's in a diner. In this diner, it just so happens to set up all of our characters here, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have Erin Gray, known for being in Battlestar Galactica.
I thought she was in Buck Rogers.
You're right. Was it Buck Rogers?
Yes.
I don't know why I said that. The bees. They're all, for some reason, those shows all blended together when I was a kid. Buck Rogers. And we have an Erin Gray story. We almost went and met Erin Gray. She was at a convention we were at, and I have a poster of Jason versus Freddy, but I had all the victims from both characters
From both, yeah, both characters.
Their movies, I have their victim sign in red on the sides of their characters. And I saw Aaron Gray and I said, oh, I have to get the Jason poster signed. And you said, no, Aaron Gray's, no, not her. And I was like, really? I had John Saxon do it. And here we are going, really, we're going to stop at Aaron Gray? And now I'm kind of mad that I never did it.
Aw. Well, I'm sorry about that, but John Saxon, we went up and talked to him. He was really cool, but he's also not only a bad movie all-star, but he's amazing. He's
yeah, but still, know. I mean, Aaron Gray, you got, like, I feel like, you know, boost up the poster and who signed it, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
I know. Well, you know, we have a lot of the Jasons that signed it, and we have Robert Englund. It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, I mean, in the victims category, of course.
Yeah.
I'm never going to meet Kevin Bacon. Well, we were standing near him during a concert that he did, but and Johnny Depp. I'm never going to meet these people, but that would have been nice. But Aaron Gray would have been cool. So Aaron Gray's here, and she's a waitress in this this little diner that is making Jason patties.
Okay, first of all, let's establish that this is Youngstown, Ohio, and he's supposedly from, you know, Jason's from Youngstown, Ohio, and that's why they're doing, like, let's catch Jason Voorhees special of the day.
It wasn't let's catch, it was Jason's dead.
Or Jason's dead.
Because they don't believe that he transferred in the body.
Right, Jason's dead, special of the day, 2-for-1 Jason Voorhees burgers.
Yeah.
And which are like hockey masks.
I'm glad you brought the Ohio thing, because you were talking about this during the movie, saying, wasn't it New Jersey?
Yeah, I could have sworn that it was not Ohio or anywhere near there that they filmed the other movies, but they did film in New Jersey, so I don't know where they're getting Ohio from. That makes no sense.
I've always liked that the Friday 13th movies were taking place somewhere in America, but in the middle and not around the edges. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've always kind of liked that idea that it was somewhere more of like a, you know, like a wood, like the backwoods type of thing.
Yeah.
I always kind of like that better. I know it's whatever. It fits the plot, so
it's all fictional anyway, yeah, because Cunningham County, New Jersey doesn't even exist.
Of course, because it's named after the creator.
The creator, who's a douche.
Yeah, that's another one of the things. But this diner is basically an exposition dump. Every character has got something to say that's an exposition walkthrough.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the sheriff I think the sheriff's name is something too, right? Isn't it Landis?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
Like after horror movie people?
Yeah, you know that thing where you're going to do a reference to every single person.
Yeah, probably something like that.
Yep, Sheriff Landis. And Sheriff Landis is, Aaron Gray and him are together. They're a couple. We have the two diner owners, which is a husband and wife. And we have their son. We have Aaron Gray goes to serve a person eating with a menu who orders a Jason burger and 5 Jason fries.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it was a Voorhees burger and 5 Jason fries.
Jason fingers. It's the stupidest thing.
Yeah, it was like 5 fingers. That's 5 French fries. You only get 5 French fries on the thing.
Yeah, that's pretty much it,
I guess. It turns out to be Clayton Duke, and Clayton Duke is basically, it just really talks to her like shit.
I'm going to kill Jason Voorhees. I need you to help me.
Jason Voorhees is dead.
You know he's not. I know he's not. And he's coming for you.
Your food will be right out.
Name your price. Everyone has a price. What's yours?
What do you want?
You know what I want. And you know why I need you.
I think you need to leave.
I know everything about you, Diana. I know who you really are.
What's the problem here?
Oh, I was just making your girlfriend there a little proposition, Chief, and she's thinking it over. Right, love?
Come on, get up.
Why don't you blow me, Chief? Hmm? Right after your girlfriend there gets through.
That's my lady you're talking about.
Well, now, see, she is only your lady because she ain't had a taste of the Duke yet.
Jason is coming for her specifically.
But why?
Because she's a Voorhees.
Okay, how?
We don't know. This is something written out of thin air.
All right, well, I need to discuss this because this is the part of the movie where I'm like, okay, I've already had enough of this stupid nonsense. She's a Voorhees. Now, are we talking that, you know, where did she come from, number one? Because Pamela Voorhees explains this whole thing.
I am Jason. You see, Jason was my son, and today is his birthday.
Where's Mr. Christie?
Oh, I couldn't let them open this place again. Could I? Not after what happened. Oh, my sweet, innocent Jason. My only child. Jason.
And now all of a sudden there's a sister. So we're to assume that when Pamela split up with her husband, if that's what happened,
he got remarried
and had another kid, and there's some long lost sister out there.
It could
give
be
me a break.
It, apparently, another one of the script writes, they originally wrote a script, and it was that Jason's father. We follow Jason's father, who comes and digs up Jason's grave and eats his heart, and that's how this all starts. So originally Jason's father was going to be a part of this because he is a lingering plot thread that recently, I think there is a lot of talk about Brian Fuller doing a Camp Crystal Lake show that would be like a Bates Motel that explains what happened with his father. It could be interesting, but it's something that this movie could have benefited from to make the plot make more sense. Another thing that also was originally intended was that the main character in this movie, who we are about to meet in this movie, was supposed to be Tommy Jarvis. But the companies didn't own the rights. The company that made this one, I believe is New Line Cinema, didn't own the right to Tommy Jarvis because he was in the ones that were made under the other company.
Was that was Dimension, right?
Was the original film's Dimension? I can't remember.
I think so.
But they didn't own the rights, so they had to cut that out.
Okay.
And they had to change the name. While Clayton Duke is bashing on her, he gets arrested for basically threatening the sheriff as well, who goes to punch him after he is hit on his girlfriend in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
They arrest him and they bring him to jail. While he goes quietly, he just goes quietly, which is really interesting. And he goes with one of his deputies named Randy. Who is played by the brother of the writer and director of this movie.
Oh, okay.
We also see that she goes and sits at the bar and sits next to a guy. And that guy is our main character in this movie. He is played by Johnny LeMay. He's playing Steven. He was in movies like The Couch Trip and Freeway Maniac. After this movie, he pretty much went back to stage stuff. But he shows up, he's kind of like a dork, but he's weird. He's wearing glasses, and he seems a little dorky, but he's wearing a Letterman jacket. So basically everything with this character is not explained in this movie.
He's like a walking contradiction, because this guy, he's number one, the most badass character. He is. He is a dork. You know, he has no rhyme or reason to anything that he does, but he is a badass.
He's kind of like a badass in the fact that he's lucking his way through everything. He is not the MVP of this movie, but we'll get to that later on. He does go out of his way to try to do the right things. And in the dorkiest ways possible. Well,
he's the most unassuming hero. He really is. Like, never anticipate that he's going to be the way he is in this movie.
True. But you also don't understand his character whatsoever. And as the movie goes on, I guess we'll mention it more, Aaron Gray sits down next to him and says, I guess he referenced that he heard them talking behind him. And he's like, I guess he's really worried about Jason Voorhees coming for you or something like that. And she's like, look, there's a lot of stuff I haven't told you. There's a lot of stuff my daughter needs to know about my daughter and me. And do you still care about my daughter? And he's like, of course. well, you should come. I need to tell you stuff. And he's like, tell me now. No, come to my house at 11 o'clock at night. Okay. And don't be late. Oh, this is an odd thing for apparently a guy who has dated her daughter.
Yeah, well, you know, she does work late, so it makes sense.
But maybe
there's nothing behind that, so don't try to look for anything behind it. Like,
I wasn't trying to say anything, but it was just like, why at 11 o'clock at night? Why not just go talk now?
Because she was working.
She sat down next to him at the bar. I mean, I think that a few minutes here to say what she needs to say could have just went through.
I know. I always hate those kind of people that are like, oh my God, I have something to tell you, but I'll tell you later.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, bitch, you're going to tell me now because I have no, like, patience. Yeah, exactly. At all.
Like, I know it's something important. I need to know what it is.
Yeah.
Well, he goes off and we get to see his little drive. He, for some reason, I guess at all night, he's been doing something, and then he picks up some hitchhikers. So he picks up three hitchhikers, two women, one guy.
These people.
Yeah, he picks up one guy and two women, and they say they're going to go to Camp Crystal Lake, and he goes, what, are you going to go have some
premarital sex and smoke some weed?
And get slashed to death or something like that? And they're like, what? Like,
wow. Okay. So we are now 9 movies in and these fuckers don't know anything about Camp Crystal Lake.
They do. They say Jason's dead. We don't need to worry about that anymore.
But still, I mean, it's just filthy, covered in blood. I mean, come on. They call it Camp Blood.
Yeah.
I mean, these people, it's just like, but this is like a cliche, you know? We have these teenagers in all these movies. Yeah. They're just a cliche. They're just there because we know they're going to get slaughtered.
Yes. And even our character says it because they're referencing they know what these movies are.
Mm-hmm.
But Steven says 2 years ago they ripped down the camp. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing there now. Which makes me go, well, Jason was alive 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How was he not killing everybody who was ripping down the camp?
Right.
I think this is interesting because in Freddy vs. Jason, they do reference that they're building some kind of resort.
Yes.
And I thought that was kind of cool that in later movies, mm-hmm. they might actually reference this.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you, if you were just some unsuspecting tourist, would you want to go to the resort where Camp Blood was once before?
Would I? No, yeah. But you would make me.
Of course I would.
Exactly. And you know the first person thrown out the window would be me. Well, you snored.
I'll be sleeping. I'll be like, you're fine.
So, of course, what happens to these people? Of course, they go out. I love that the one girl is, I guess she's very lonely that her friend and her boyfriend are going to have sex. And she's all by herself, which is like, why did you go along with that?
I know. Why are you? Okay. You know exactly what's going to happen. I mean, someone's going to have sex here.
Yeah.
You might as well make it a menage.
That's what I was wondering too.
Like, sleeping outside under the stars all by herself.
But she's so hard up that she asked Steven, hey, basically, you got a free pass to have sex with me.
Yeah. And he doesn't go.
Because I'm trying to be a better guy and I got to go meet somebody.
Well, yeah, okay, whatever. He's just a dummy. He could have just gotten some,
like, if he did, he would have got killed.
That's true. Because out of nowhere, which is, I mean, I guess the first place Jason would go is back home to Camp Crystal Lake. So that explains why the coroner was there and killed these three people.
Yeah.
He killed them.
He's working his way. Actually, he's not working his way, working his way home. He's working his way to his sister.
Yes, but he had to pass through home, you know, just to go check on things, make sure his mother's decapitated head is still sitting there. Yeah, I mean, you
the
know.
Woods is all he knows. It's you not know. Like he drives.
Yeah, just to go visit mama and, you know, try on the sweater, make sure it still fits. Everything's good. Okay. But, yeah, he kills these three people.
I do love, we have to talk about how he kills the girl. They're having sex, and he sticks a signpost, a jagged signpost, through a girl and rips her in half.
Okay, can we talk about the gore? I'm going to tell you something. I do not care for this movie, but I did like this gore.
Gore's great.
They did a good job with it.
And of course, it's the people from Walking Dead.
Of course it is. Nicotero.
Yep.
And it's fantastic. It's amazing. I that's one of the things that I really loved about this movie. It was great.
I think it's got some great gore. Yeah, I think it's some really interesting practical effects, some really unique ideas going on here.
Yeah.
Well, all three of those kids get killed as a part of his victims. Well, Steven goes and drives toward her house. For some reason, he's way out of his way. And somehow Jason, you know what? Now that I'm saying this out loud, it actually doesn't make any sense.
Nope.
Because Jason also kidnaps a person at the diner, mm-hmm. which is a cop. And I guess he kills his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes over this guy's body in the house, the Voorhees family home. He straps him down and actually shaves his face just so he can stick what looks like a giant black slug out of his mouth into this guy and take over his body, which is very reminiscent of either one of Joe's favorite movies, which is Night of the Creeps, or the movie The Hidden with...
Kyle MacLachlan?
Yes, Kyle MacLachlan. And even they said, someone asked him straight up, did you purposely do The Hidden? And he said, no, I had never seen the movie before that. And then someone had told me that I was doing something very similar to that movie. So I went and watched it and I was like shocked that it is very similar.
Hmm.
But I wasn't intending to do that. It does feel like it is The Hidden. But
that's interesting.
Yeah, he is now in this cop's body. And the cop and Aaron Gray are friends. It's not her boyfriend, but it's one of the other deputies. Well, he goes to the house when Aaron Gray gets a phone call. She starts talking to her daughter on the phone. It turns out her daughter has a newborn baby, is living out of town, and is dating someone new. And
she's dating that news reporter.
Aaron Gray doesn't know. She's like hinting around that she's dating the news reporter. The news reporter doesn't really have a good setup of his plot line, but his plot line is to get in with the Voorhees family.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he knows somehow that these are the Voorhees.
Yeah, he's just a worm. He's got an ulterior motive like most people do in these movies. But what is impressive to me is, like you were just saying, how it doesn't make any sense, because when Stephen was driving over to Aaron Gray's house, there had to be a matter of hours between the hitchhikers getting killed and the cop getting abducted and getting the slug in his mouth.
I agree.
So how long did it take to drive to Aaron Gray's house? Because
Did he go somewhere else? What time was it? I have
no idea.
It seemed like it was very late.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, so if the cop got to Aaron Gray's house before Stephen did and was trying to kill her, and Stephen came in and saw this happening and tried to protect her. So how did the cop go through this whole transformation before Stephen got there?
Yeah.
It was like a little off, but it turns out that the cop kills Aaron Gray, which I was shocked about, because I was like, wait a minute, this is like, she's a star.
Yeah.
I mean, they killed off the star of the movie. She's the only one with, like, you know, a lot of credits to her name at this point.
True.
Like, why would they do that? I thought that she was going to be something bigger, but whatever.
Well, I guess more of that playing with your expectations.
Well, yeah, because she had the Voorhees name and everything. So it was like, okay, first of all, her whole plot doesn't make sense anyway, so let's kill her off. But why even bring her in? It was kind of silly. It was a waste of her talent, I think.
Yeah.
But they killed her off, and then...
Well, I love how they kill her, because Jason is... We had to rewind it, because I was pretty damn sure. I'm like, is Jason still has a sense of humor? Because he grabs the butcher knife block, and instead of grabbing one of the butcher knives, he grabs out the knife sharpener and throws it into Aaron Gray's back. And so she has a dull knife sharpener in her body.
Yeah.
So this is what kills her. But as, you know... Now, Stephen comes in and fights off this Jason. He fights him off. He actually tackles him.
You know,
and we're like, look, this guy's trying. He's trying. You know, he throws him out the window and he stabs him with a poker.
Yeah, he really tries. He does good. I mean, for a little guy who, like, doesn't have any strength or muscles or anything, really, he does a good job of, you know, trying to beat down Jason.
Yeah. And what bothers me here is they have... I guess the plot we're supposed to think is going on is that Aaron Gray's daughter and him were an item, and her baby is this guy's baby.
Mm-hmm.
But Stephen has never seen his baby before.
Yeah, there's like some kind of little plot going on that we don't really know much about.
They don't tell you
at all. Apparently, he was dating her. She got pregnant, and he left her.
apparently he left her, but we don't ever find out why.
No.
We don't know what's happening. We don't know anything about it, but we know that Erin Gray, the mother, is trying to get them back together.
Yeah.
And when she's told that she has a new boyfriend, she doesn't react. But her daughter does say, have you seen him? Can you tell him he can see the baby?
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. Like, they're setting up that it's like she doesn't care, but she does.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so odd because the movie does not tell us what has occurred between these two people.
No, it doesn't matter, really. I mean, it's kind of just
filler. I mean, it's a lingering weird question in the movie that you can't help but question, like, what happened here?
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, the movie, it just doesn't seem to have time for it. So
no, it does not. This is an hour and 30 minute movie, and it is got a lot to do quick. It's trying to get through it all.
It does. I mean, I actually appreciate how many times this situation happens with Jason jumping into bodies. Because it's, you know, it's kind of cool. Yeah. I thought it would be like one and done, but no, it's not.
Well, the sad thing is that the sheriff comes in and catches Steven thinking that he has murdered his girlfriend. Although there's a smashed window and Steven is telling him who did it and mm-hmm. how they went out the window. I don't actually think he says it's the cop that he knows. I don't think he tells him.
I don't know. I don't remember.
It doesn't ever seem to be referenced that the cop, and all they would have to do is investigate where the cop is.
Yeah, but it wouldn't matter because the sheriff is not going to believe that one of his deputies killed this woman.
But he looks like he threw someone out of a window.
Well, he looks crazed. You know,
I mean, he's telling him, I threw him out the window. He's out the window. And he's got blood on him because he was holding Erin Gray when he got in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, he's arrested for the crime. And Randy, this guy Randy, who's his friend, is kind of like sticking up for him constantly.
He's a cop, Randy. Yeah.
That's the cop that locked up Creighton Duke. He seems like he's going to help him. But Steven can't seem to get a break. Well, he does get a break. He gets put into a jail cell right next to Creighton Duke, and we get an entire plot dump again, where that's Creighton Duke's plot. His plot is to basically tell us the whole story, what's happening, and inform the characters. But he does so by breaking Steven's fingers.
Which, there's no reason for this. It's so stupid. Everything about Creighton Duke sucks. Everything about him.
Careful, careful, Chief. I don't think you really know who I am.
You know, and they never do explain how he knows all about this lore anything, or why he's even hunting Jason. It's not just for the money, because he says it ain't about the money. But like, why then?
Well, he does. He is for the money until the moment where they tell him it's not about the money anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's really hard to understand him.
Now that is very colorful, Chief.
But the only thing you need to know is that he tells us that Jason needs a Voorhees body. Jason, to be reborn, the demon that is Jason, needs to enter a body of an actual Voorhees blood. And there's only two left. And that's the daughter and her daughter and the baby. So mm-hmm. now that Erin Gray's dead, that only leaves the daughter and their daughter.
Right. So his goal is to, his goal is to just get into a Voorhees no matter what.
To be reborn.
To be reborn. So the real Jason would be back on Earth. And
because these bodies apparently fall apart over time. Yeah, he's taking over.
They degrade. And so then he decides after the cop, he's going to jump into the boyfriend, right? The news reporter guy.
They haven't come. They come in for the funeral, and they go to the house, or the mother, and they come there. And we find out that the news reporter has been setting up this house. Jason, the original Voorhees, for some kind of, like, he's trying to trap that he hopes Jason will come there, and then Creighton Duke will get him, mm-hmm. and he'll have the whole scoop. But what he does is kidnap Erin Gray's dead body and store it in the Voorhees house.
Yeah, why? I don't know.
I don't understand this, but the house is also littered in pop culture references from horror movies. Mm-hmm. For some odd reason, the jungle gym from The Birds is outside in the front.
Mm-hmm.
They make a mention showing that. They have the Necronomicon laying on a table. Mm-hmm. In the basement of this place is the crate from Creepshow,
mm-hmm.
which is bizarre. There's a lot of these weird things. Well, the boyfriend is like apparently setting this whole thing up. Does he break out of jail here, Steven? No. Oh, he does. He breaks out of jail because Creighton Duke has told him the whole where he's like, your daughter and your girlfriend are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to save them. So he breaks out of jail by knocking out his friend and locking his friend up in the jail, taking his gun and taking his keys, locking him in, going on the run.
Mm-hmm.
So when he gets to the house, Jason has now taken over. No, I guess not. No, he goes to the house to investigate the house, but Jason has taken over the boyfriend. And so we see the cop's body rejecting that the parasite has now left him and gone to the other body.
This is so cool.
Yeah, the body starts degrading. We actually watch it melt. It's very reminiscent so cool. of like The Blob or RoboCop when the guy gets the acid on him.
Yeah, it is. I'm telling you, one thing that impressed me in this movie was the gore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing, that's one way to get to me is the gore, because I love it when there's like practical effects and it just looked so neat.
It looks neat. I wish it would have shown more of it.
Yeah.
Because it is very cool to watch.
Yeah.
And now Jason is in the boyfriend. So the boyfriend goes to get the girlfriend.
Which is Aaron Gray's daughter.
Yeah.
With the baby.
And by the way, I should mention this actress too. We didn't even mention anything about her, but her name is...
Do we know her?
Carrie Keegan. No, she quit right after this movie.
Oh.
She actually has a shower scene here. And it was a very off-putting thing on the set. She refused to do nudity in this movie. They made her do a shower scene. And the director had to be removed from the scene. Because there was like a huge argument between the two. And I guess Cunningham had to step in and film some of this movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there was a huge thing. She quit. She basically quit Hollywood right after this movie. It was such a terrible disaster for her.
I mean, I wouldn't want this to be the last thing that I did as a movie.
I know, that's true too.
Damn.
She's playing Jessica in this. So yeah, the boyfriend comes to kill Jessica. And of course, Steven gets there exactly in time to save her. And there's a battle between the boyfriend and Steven. And he runs the boyfriend over with a car after taking Jessica into the car with him. And they run over the body a few times, and then he goes off. And she makes him stop on the side of the road, and he's telling him, like, this is what's going on. He's not dead. He's going to come back again. I mean,
would you believe all this shit? Of course
not. But the guy did attack her. She's not questioning that at all.
No, not at all. But she punches him out, throws him out the car, and drives to the police station. And...
And of course, Randy has to come and get him, and they have a fist fight.
They have a fight. It's a little bit... I'm telling you, they could have made this movie in an hour. They could have. Because all this stupid filler that they put in here. But anyway, so he's cuffed and he's taken back to the station and he sees his girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend, and his baby. And he sees them. They're at the station.
He actually tells Randy to lock him up and bring him there because mm-hmm. she's there. But before he can get there on time, the boyfriend has come there. Somehow got there before him as well. Got to the police station. And is starting to kill all the cops in the station.
Oh, you're right. The baby wasn't there. She was only there.
The baby is actually with, and this is crazy. We forgot to talk about this. There's a babysitter who works at the diner.
Mm-hmm.
She has the baby, and she puts the baby. Well, she brings the baby into the diner. The head of the diner says, "What the hell is that fucking thing? You're not bringing that thing in this establishment." They talk her into allowing it, but she puts this baby in a pineapple box on top of a stove, like on top of a sink.
This was like, I was laughing because I was like, okay, first of all, these people have never seen a baby before.
Yeah.
Like, bottom line is, you put a baby in a box that's almost a toddler. Like, at least this kid is almost 9-10 months old. They crawl. You think that this kid is not going to crawl out of that box and fall and crack his head open on the floor?
It's wild.
I was like, this is the stupidest thing to add this baby in here. But I know why they added the baby to the movie now. Because he's, or she actually, is a Voorhees. Which, it's like, okay, first of all, I just can't take it anymore with that plot. That's just so stupid. There's no way he has a sister. But whatever.
Yeah. Well, Steven gets to see his baby. That's before he gets... all that happened, he was able to get a car from the kid at the diner, and he sees his baby for the first time, and that's how he's able to get everywhere quick with his car, because he's got that one kid's car. But he gets to the police station exactly when he's killing everybody, and he's able to once again save Jessica by
such a badass
jumping out of his handcuffs midair, punching out Randy, his friend, again, stealing his gun and riddling and shooting the news reporter.
The news reporter, but it goes nowhere because you can't kill him like that.
Yeah. Well, they get out of there at least, but he wakes back up and kills the rest of the cops. And they race back to the Voorhees house and they get Creighton Duke. Oh, Creighton Duke, actually, they race to the diner to get the baby that the babysitter's watching. And Creighton Duke is able to escape at the same time while he's killing everybody at the police station, the Jason. So when they get to the diner, the people at the diner are like, she goes, the mother of my, I'm the mother of that baby. And they're like, you're not going to go near that ray of sunshine. So now, like, they're full on defending the baby from her because she's with a person they think killed Erin Gray.
Yeah.
They're like, that's not what happened. Give me my baby. So they're all kind of fighting. At the same time, they tell the son, the cook, to go to the police station across the street. It's that close.
Right across, go across the street.
Here's a gun. Go across the street. And they're like, don't go across the street. You're going to die. And they're like telling him to shut up. The moment he goes outside, Jason is walking up to him and breaks this guy's arm out of his sockets. We should say
not Jason or a news reporter.
It's Jason.
I mean, I guess.
It's Jason in another person's body. So he, I love this whole scene. I love the diner sequence. I think it's fun. Jason basically kills the son outside, goes inside, and a firefight ensues in this place.
It's funny. This is the best scene in the movie, I think.
And this is where we actually get our MVP. We're going to point her out. This actress's name is Allison Smith. She's playing Vicky, the MVP of this film.
Vicky is a waitress at the diner, and she is a badass.
She is a badass. She fights Jason for a good 5 minutes in the sequence. It goes on. Everybody, and what's funny is, I guess the director was forced into shooting this in a slower speed, and it comes off. And also, he's like a first-time director. He didn't really know what he was doing. Everything is slowed down. So this whole thing is almost in slow mode. But it looks really cool. They're all kind of fighting Jason in different ways. And the Vicky character is open, like just like Terminator, getting the shotgun up, shooting this guy. She shoots this guy. Actually, shoots someone else in the diner as well, by the way.
I know. But, innocent bystander got killed. Yeah.
But Jason keeps moving, and he starts killing off the people inside. He kills the two owners, the husband and the wife. He takes the husband, and shoves his face into a frying oil and drowns him in it.
That was cool.
And then while he's doing that, the wife tries to stop him. He punches her with his elbow and crushes her entire mouth into her face.
It's kind of, that was really funny.
It's so funny. It's just the kind of right stupid that you kind of like.
It really is.
And it's all shot in like the dark, which is it kind of looks neat. I kind of like it. Here comes Vicky again. Now, Vicky is riddling this guy with a shotgun and then runs out of bullets and picks up a rebarb that's just hanging around in a restaurant for no reason and throws it up in the air and catches it like she's going to use it like a javelin. And she runs and jams it into Jason, pinning him into a wall. The problem is Jason's able to grab her and also impale her onto it. But while she's getting killed by him, she's like, fuck you, you know, like, die, motherfucker, or whatever. And Jason grabs her head and pops it like a melon, unfortunately.
It sucks. I didn't want Vicky to die. She was the most badass character.
Man, she really kicked ass.
Yeah.
They knew it, too, because the characters actually give her, oh, Vicky's dead. They actually give her a moment when no one gives a shit about the two owners of the restaurant or the people in the restaurant. No one cares.
I know.
Vicky gets a moment of silence.
Jessica finds a note in the box where the baby was sitting, and it says, I have your baby. Come to the Voorhees house alone, right? So she just grabs keys to the car and just runs off and leaves everybody behind. She gets to the house where Duke is, he gives her a sacrificial dagger.
He throws her a knife that turns into a special dagger when she touches it. Yes. It's what? Really weird. And he accidentally falls into a trap door, and he gets impaled in the basement on rebar as well, or some sort.
It's like, yeah, it's in his leg, so he can't get up. So he's stuck in the basement, and we see the sheriff comes in that he punched him in the face at the police station, and we thought he was dead.
It looked like he crushed his nose, but he didn't.
No, he came in and he's like, "Oh, here, I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you." And Jessica's like, "No, no, no, you're the monster. You're the monster."
Well, because Creighton's going, "Kill them all."
Yeah, kill them all. Kill them all. Don't trust them. It could be Jason. It could be Jason. And so then behind him is Randy, and Randy's like, "You know, don't touch her. Get away from her." Like he's trying to protect her, but she stabs the sheriff.
Well, he kind of like runs into it while she's holding it up.
Yeah, but she stabs him, and yeah, she just committed murder because he was not Jason. It turns out that Randy was Jason.
Randy was Jason, and here's the most interesting thing is Randy's talking.
Mm-hmm.
So Jason knows how to speak.
Yeah.
Okay, that was interesting.
That's the first time we see it. It's the
only time you see this.
Yep. That's a twist.
He's able to say he's freeze. Well, he is Jason Randy, and I would blame, I blame Steven for knocking him out and letting Jason take his body.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, we don't really know what happened after the diner, so I don't know how Randy got taken, but Randy goes to try to put the baby himself into the baby.
Yeah, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he needs a Voorhees.
But there's a huge fight, mm-hmm. and Steven comes in, and Steven gets, this is really funny, they slash Randy's neck open with the sacrificial dagger, and what looks like ramen noodles come out.
Oh, that was cool.
But it is actually a little goblin, and I absolutely love it. It's like a little ghoulie.
Yeah.
And he runs around.
He looks like a little, like, sperm.
He looks like a little bat ghoulie or some sort. He actually jumps at Steven and tries to bite his throat out. And Steven throws him away, but he falls into the basement. And then Steven realizes, hey, Creighton, let me ask you something. Does the Voorhees person have to be alive to take their body? And he goes, I don't know, I don't think so.
No.
And he's like, we got a problem. Jessica's mother is in the basement. Her dead body's in the basement.
What's it doing?
I don't know.
Duke, that part about being reborn through a Voorhees woman, does it have to be a living woman? Duke, that thing's in the basement with Jessica's mother.
Holy Mother of God.
And then we see the little goblin crawl right up her vajayjay.
My vajayjay is painin'.
Oh my god. Okay, first of all, I'm trying to make logical sense out of this silliness, but like, if she's dead, how can she get up and walk around, even if Jason's soul is in her? She's
no, because dead. when the demon that is Jason enters a Voorhees body,
he changes back.
He just resurrects into the form.
Okay.
But what I love is that he shoots out of the basement now, like a joke, like someone jumping out of the grave.
Yes.
He shoots out of the grave, out of the floor, and he is full ball sack Jason again. He has got the mask on and everything.
Yep. He doesn't revert back to child Jason or anything like that.
Yeah.
He's just his nasty, like, toxic Avenger looking Jason.
Or it would have been cool that, because, you know, the poster for this is the little goblin coming out of the mask, but the mask is like this really cool shredder silver looking mask.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been cool if he was wearing, like, it was an upgraded version of Jason. Yeah. What a shot out of the basement. And not the tumor version that we got in the opening here.
Right.
If this was like a new form, that would have been kind of neat.
Yeah. Well, this end fight is kind of interesting. I mean, he kills Duke right off the bat.
He does kill Duke.
He squeezes the shit out of Duke's body until he just pops. And then there's a huge fight between Jessica trying to stab him with the dagger. She's a total bimbo. She fucks it up so bad so many times, loses the dagger, it gets thrown, you know, down the basement, it gets thrown over here, over there, But Steven's trying like hell, yeah. Man. He's fighting like a devil.
What I love is that Jason just keeps chucking him. He doesn't kill him. He chucks him into everything. He could
easily pop him like a freaking grape, but he doesn't. He just throws him about. It's hysterical. It's like,
and we have to point out, we love this because the stunt double for Steven is clearly Kane Hodder, because you can see his mullet hair.
Yeah.
And we kept seeing it because they have different hair colors and different styles of hair,
mm-hmm.
but you can tell it's Kane Hodder. So then while we're laughing when he was chucking Steven all over the place, we know that Kane Hodder is now playing Jason.
Yeah, so I'm like, if that's Kane Hodder, then who's that guy?
Who's he chucking now?
It just seemed like...
I
was like,
I hope it's really the actor just getting chucked around by Kane Hodder. Oh my God.
I mean, it just seemed like two stunt guys were just having fun, you know, just tossing each other around.
Which is a thing in these movies.
Yeah, though. It just seemed like they were having a lot of fun.
And we met Kane Hodder, and he choked the crap out of us.
Whoa! Hold it right there. Don't move a fucking muscle, either of you.
Joey, I just want
to... Shut up! You're with him. Nobody's going to touch that fucking ray of sunshine. Pookie, call the station.
So I will say that he could have literally been chucking around the actors.
I mean, let me tell you, he could have snapped me like a grape, okay, big time. Like, just popped my head right off, because I have never experienced anything like that.
Yeah.
And we heard that he doesn't do that anymore.
Oh, someone probably complained. I mean, I got choked really bad. I know you too. Probably got lesser than me.
Oh, he got me. But big time.
He really, our photo is my eyes almost popping out.
Yeah, mine too. I mean, I'll put that online when this comes out, but that photo says it all. I mean, I had a smile on my face, but I was getting choked out. I mean, he looks like a murderer.
I want to say, like, I'm a fan of his. I just don't like the Jason very much, only because it's just so different from the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
I do like Kane Hodder. The guy has given his body and soul to these performances.
Yes.
And he's even hurt himself for these roles. He's a legend. I'm not taking that away from him. I'm just not too into the Jason version. I want to say that.
Yeah, and then here she comes, the total twit with the freaking sacrificial dagger and... does like a huge leap and
a Buffy the Vampire Slayer killing.
Yeah, totally Buffy.
It's actually very reminiscent of the Game of Thrones ending where the Night King or whatever the hell it is, where she runs and with stabs Arya. Him.
Yeah. But so that's it. So he's like flailing all about, and he tries to grab Steven because Jason's being dragged into like the pit of hell.
Yeah,
by like demon hands.
Big demon hands come out,
and he's trying to grab Steven to take him to hell with him. And so finally, Bimbo Jessica grabs Steven and saves him. But then you see Jason go into the ground, and the ground seals up, and the only thing that's left is his mask. But that's dug up by a dog.
It's kind of like dug up a little bit by a dog.
Yeah, and then you see, of course, the big ending, the big finish is Freddy's glove coming out and grabbing the mask, which leads everyone to believe that the next movie is going to be Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, and it's clearly Kane Hodder doing the Freddy laugh.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Or doing his best interpretation of
Robert Englund. It's definitely not Robert Englund, but it was okay.
And this was their way. And I heard that Robert Englund did not know this was happening.
Yeah, he didn't.
Yeah, he wasn't informed.
Yeah.
And when he heard that that's how the movie ended, he was like, is this a thing? Is it happening? I should kind of know.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was all made just to lead into that next movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. I look... As much as you don't like it and other people don't seem to like it, I think it's a fun, different film. And I think that if it wasn't Jason, this would have kind of been a cult classic. It does remind me of things like The Hidden. And people seem to love that movie with like unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a goofy, fun cult film. And I actually think it kind of works. I think it's interesting. Even as a Jason film, for me, I think it's kind of... I don't know what it is. It's just like a fun little movie. It's like a fun part of the lore. Interesting way to tie into Freddy versus Jason. I don't mind it. I give credit to anybody trying to make something different in a long-running, stale getting stale franchise.
Well, I do agree with you. I do appreciate when someone tries to revitalize things by, you know, changing it up a bit. I appreciate that. But I just thought this one was ridiculous. I mean, you're treating us like we're a bunch of morons. I mean, there's no way that there's any more Voorhees out there. That's just stupid. And if there are, you need to give us a little bit more explanation on this. You can't just toss this stuff in our face and be like, hey, this is what we're doing. No, because we've already sat through 8 movies and we know about Jason Voorhees. So give us a little credit for, you know, being loyal fans of this franchise and tell us, like, how the hell he has a friggin' sister. I would love to know. You know, there was some characters in this movie that I were like, they suck. Like Creighton, whatever.
And it's a shame because a fun fact about his character, Tony Todd tried out for it.
Which would have probably been more interesting.
It would have made it all probably funnier. If someone like Ken Foray or Tony Todd would have done it, it might have elevated that insanity to another level. I like the Stephen Williams actor. I do like him, but he doesn't work.
No.
It needed to, if you're going to do an insane character, you need to get an insane actor. Mm-hmm. And apparently Stephen Williams said, I'll do it, but I want to wear a cowboy hat.
Okay.
And it's like, okay, so the character wasn't even going to be a cowboy?
I just don't know. The characters I did not appreciate. One being Jessica. I didn't find her to be at all likable.
Yeah, very miscast.
You know, I feel that Erin Gray was misused. There's no reasoning for her to be in the movie. It could have been anyone. So my score on this is going to be a 3.
That is crazy to me.
It's a 3 because I really appreciated the gore and I appreciated the character of Steven. That's it. I did not really.
That's mind blowing. You're giving it the same score as Texas Chainsaw Massacre: Next Generation.
Hey, that one was pretty entertaining. This one was. I mean, even though it was terrible.
I'm blown away by this. I don't think this movie is bad.
I really don't think it's good either. So
I don't think. That kind of score to me. Not at all. Let me ask you this. Okay, so Resurrection, we did. Halloween Resurrection.
Yes.
Which one of these 3 movies is the best so far?
I guess Halloween Resurrection was the best, in my opinion.
Wow.
I mean, I have to be honest. I gave Halloween Resurrection... I did,
you're changing it. It's worse than you remember it to be.
I gave it a 4. I mean, I ended on. I initially, when I first saw that movie, gave it a 6, but I changed it to a 4. Because it is a bad film. It's just absolutely bad. Do I want to say that this one is better than the Texas Chainsaw Massacre? I guess it is. Yeah, I guess it is. So that would just have to push me over to a 4.
I would say that when you watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Next Generation the first time, you hated it. Then we watched it again for the podcast. And you said, you know, it's a little better than I remember it. A little better.
A little better, yeah.
But Jason Goes to Hell, we've seen multiple times, and we both agree that there's a lot of fun things about it.
All right, you talked me into the 4. I don't think this is a good movie, and I'm going to tell you, after watching it again, it's just wearing on me worse. I mean, the characters are trash. I do like Steven, but otherwise, it's not a good movie.
Whereas in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I said in the Next Gen, when I saw it again, I said, you know what? It's better than I remember. It's starting to grow on me. But Halloween Resurrection did the opposite. It got worse. Like, I don't remember being as bad as everybody said. Then I'm watching it, and I'm like, it is bad. It is very bad. But this movie is by far the best of the 3 for me so far. By far. I think this movie is actually... I mean, we like movies like Frankenhooker, and I think that this movie is actually superior in the sense that it feels like an actual movie with some good special effects, some interesting ideas. It's trying.
All right, that's why it gets a 4 from me, because of special effects.
Hey, no hate here, no hate.
But I think it's better than Texas Chainsaw, I do, but I think it's slightly worse than Halloween.
Wow. All right.
Resurrection.
For me, definitely the opposite. I am giving this movie a 5.
Okay.
I would have originally given this a 6. I don't think this movie is bad. I actually kind of find it enjoyable, but I do know there's problems. And watching it for the podcast again, I'm like, okay, I can see it. My eyes have changed a lot to the Friday 13th series as we, over the years, some of them are growing on me. Some of them are really getting worse. And some of them I've never understood why people have liked. I'm going to give this one a 5. I just kind of enjoy it. I kind of enjoy its stupidity. I kind of enjoy its weird characters. Everything feels kind of interesting. I actually wish this movie was a little longer and the gore was more intense. And they went a little further with some of the characters' backstories to make them make sense. Then I think this movie would have been way much more fun.
Okay. Well, we watched the uncut version, so, I mean, I thought the gore was pretty good, but that's, again, the two reasons why I'm giving it a 4. All right, 4 and a 5. And that brings us to our segment of Why We Can't Have Nice Things, where I read out two extremes of internet reviews, a 1-star and a 10-star review, as proof that people ruin the rating system, and prove that no matter what, there's always going to be someone who fucks it up for the rest of us. And I'm going to read the 10-star review right now, and there are several on this. Although this film gets a little too sci-fi, it still has, 1, a high body count, 2, good-looking teenagers, 3, an unbeatable Jason Voorhees, and 4, gore and violence. What more could you ask for? Nothing, in my opinion. Also, this film has much better acting, special effects, sound quality, and picture quality. Good to rent. 10 out of 10.
I love good to rent.
All right.
Okay, that was funny.
1 out of 10. This movie is awful. I've been a lifelong fan of Friday the 13th. I love this franchise. I love Jason. This is not a Friday the 13th movie. I don't know what the hell Adam Marcus was thinking when he made this piece of crap movie. This is not Friday the 13th. Jason body hops in this movie. It's pathetic. Since when has Jason ever body hopped? The filmmakers couldn't even spell Voorhees correctly on the mailbox. Then you have this Creighton Duke character coming out of nowhere claiming to be an expert on Jason, saying that the only way to kill him is with a magic dagger. What the fuck? And Jason suddenly has a sister? This movie is absolute garbage.
So, I mean, that's exactly my, this is my, that's my problem. I mean, this guy kind of says everything that is my thought about what the problems are. People go, oh, it's not what I like. So it's not the same old, which is Jason just randomly killing new edition teenagers, mm-hmm. acting very corny. The last two before this movie, I know that people seem to love 7. I have never understood it.
The paintball one?
Yeah, the paintball
one. Our little nephew loves that. Where it's like a full
comedy, where he's like, someone's like, that person who gave this one a 1 is probably a huge fan of 7. And what I hate is, oh, he doesn't body hop. Oh, he didn't have a sister. But I really like when Jason is James Bond in the opening. Yeah, because that's what Jason's known for. Shoving a person's face and making a smiley face on a tree. That's okay, but this isn't. And that's what really, really pisses me off.
Oh, God.
They're like, they tried. The body hopping is there to make sense out of all the random bodies that this character has had.
Mm-hmm.
He's looked different in every film. It would also make sense of why the father does what he does in 5. Although he's trying to get revenge, it also kind of would be neat to say, no, it's Jason body hopping. I think it's kind of cool. And also what happens to Tommy at the end of 5, which would have been neat.
Yeah. I mean, I think we needed a little more Tommy Jarvis. I mean, he does come back after, you know, it's not Corey Feldman, right?
He came way before.
Yeah, no.
He's 5 and 6.
Yeah, he's and 5 and 6. Yeah, but then they show him growing up, who's Tom Matthews.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
So, Tom Matthews, man, he's a horror movie all-star. Love me some Tom. Anyway, I don't know. We need more Tommy Jarvis.
Let me ask you this, I guess, as a parting conversation here. Is this the worst Friday the 13th movie for you?
No.
So what is? Is this the second to the worst?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think it is.
So you'll take the paintball one as like everybody else does?
Well, let's say, okay, the paintball one is trash. That's trash. Jason Takes Manhattan is bad.
It's bad. Like, I don't even remotely like it.
I think I'm going to have to go ahead and say that this one is better than Manhattan. But I gave it a 4. I mean, I would give Manhattan a 3, to be honest with you. It's trash. But, I mean, the guy gets his head popped off with one punch. Fuck your goddamn stereo.
It's so bad. Yeah. Stereo. That's like the best parts of the whole movie. Everything on the boat, which is the whole movie, is bad. The boat stuff.
I love how people are absent in Times Square.
Yeah, Canada. It's actually Canada.
I know. It's hysterical. But anyway.
I guess I wanted to know that more than anything else. Is this your least favorite?
No.
Because I can't imagine this being... Like, 3D is not that good.
No, but we laugh. We like it. 3D.
We like it in a tongue-in-cheek way. That is a 4. Yes. This is so bad, it's good for me. This one is like, it's actually more competent than some of these other ones.
2 and 3 are probably, like, you know, on my higher part of the... Yes, because I do like...
I'm one of those weirdos that likes 5. I know a 4 is my favorite. Oh, and the remake is my favorite.
Yeah, the remake, yeah.
Remake is my favorite, then 4, then whatever. I think that's interesting. I'm just surprised that this is the lowest rated.
So it's safe to say Kurzinger is your favorite, Jason?
Oh, geez, I didn't know that was going to be thrown out there. I really do like his interpretation. I like the Frankenstein's monster, the sad boy under the mask while he's killing. I think it's interesting.
I remember when you met him, I just could not believe how goddamn tall he was. He's a beast.
He's a beast.
I mean, he is. If I saw him just walking towards me without a mask on, I would be scared.
Oh, and
he's a nice guy, though.
Awesome guy. He was shocked. He said, "Don't let Kane hear that you like my Jason." And I'm going to say, like...
They don't get along, huh?
Well, I don't know. Kane does chuck him into the glass mirror in Manhattan.
Oh shit.
He's the guy at the restaurant. He throws into a window.
Oh shit.
I will say this, he also has my favorite stunt as Jason. He walks to the cornfield on fire. It is awesome.
Well, if you were Kane Hodder, would you ever do that shit again?
No,
he's but burned on 90% of his body.
That it just looks so cool. Like I don't know. I really like Jason versus Freddy. Jason.
Oh, I love Jason versus Freddy. It's so good.
There's something about it. It's like you can feel like the trapped boy inside, like the Frankenstein's monster. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you for listening, everybody. I hope I didn't piss anybody off too much. And
all those hot takes are coming later. We're gonna really piss you guys off.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how I feel at the end of this. Well, anyways. I'd love to hear your opinions on Jason. I know you got some hot takes if you're listening to this and you have some of your own opinions. If you disagree, of course you probably do. And if you do agree, which would be really nice, which would be really rare and possible, I'd love to hear it.
I'm here shaking my head.
Hit us up on Instagram at Just Another Movie Night and Joe at The Crafty Misfit. We'd love to hear your opinions and we would love to hear suggestions for movies to do. And we would love to hear, hey, do this horror movie. I want to hear more Friday 13th conversations. I'm in. Love to hear about it. Tell us what you think. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Bye.
I'm going to say 2 words to you, Mr. Duke, and I want you to say the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay?
Okay.
You ready?
Shoot.
Jason Voorhees.
Well, that makes me think of a little girl in a pink dress sticking a hot dog through a donut.